11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 20 minutes. You guys can always watch the show on YouTube, Twitch, X, Facebook. Make sure you subscribe. Check out the show there. Cody looks at a lot of the chats on Twitch and YouTube there. Text line, I've got that covered as well. 913-586-7965. That's the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. So we will get to all that throughout the show today. We'll also get back into in the Chiefs Red Half Hour, specifically Brett Veach, Andy Reid, the draft, and just the timeline for their careers, basically, in Kansas City and where that currently sits. But let's start with the playoffs some more as we get closer and closer to Wild Card Weekend. And we were talking with Ross Tucker just about some of the matchups. But there's also, look, as a fan, you got some teams you hope lose right away. And you got some teams you're like, you know what? I like that quarterbacker. You know what? They're not a problem. So whatever.
Especially because the Chiefs aren't in the playoffs. I feel like this is more important than ever.
So we wanted to go through, and you guys text in as well if you want, the top three teams if you had to root for and the top three that you are definitively rooting against. You have no interest in seeing them have any success.
When I was thinking about this last night, I was calling it the likability index because I just like the idea of who are these teams that you're like, you know what? If they win, I'll live my life. I won't feel bad. And the ones that, like, it would pain your soul. Pain your soul. We could start with the likable teams.
Some of these were easy, man.
We could start with the likable teams. I think the Panthers is an obvious one, but that's just mostly, I'll be honest, I put them on the list only because what the hell do I care if the Panthers won the whole thing and they're not going to win the whole thing anyway.
They're not going to win their first game.
So to root for them, it hurts me zero gold. They're not going to win, but from a winning perspective, they can't hurt me, and I don't care.
Okay.
Now, for the other two teams, these are the teams who, if they went on a run and got hot, could actually win the Super Bowl, and certainly is at least possible they could win the Super Bowl, as they are 2 and 3 seeds, that wouldn't bother me at all. One is the Jags. What do I care? Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence is likable enough, even though I didn't believe in him as a quarterback and still have serious questions. Liam Cohen's been a fun story. It's Jacksonville. Doesn't feel like the kind of team that they'll immediately try to supercharge and put Trevor Lawrence above Patrick Mahomes, so I don't have to worry about that storyline. It would feel like a one-off, like the roster just got good at the right time, Gold, and they had the right team, so what? And the other one for me was the Bears. I got several friends who are Bears fans. Massey's a Bears fan. That's a loser franchise for the most part who doesn't even know what it's like to enjoy life. So you know what? When it's stuff like that, NFC side doesn't really bother me. Like Ben Johnson, like some of the teammates around there. You know, Missouri Tiger on there. You say I'm a UMKC guy, so I have to root for Missouri.
You are.
Whatever it is, the Bears seem like a perfectly fine, likable team to root for in the postseason.
I know the Chiefs aren't in it, but I'm still totally locked in this weekend. I can't wait. I'm still excited. I'm still an NFL fan, and it's still football, and it's the best thing out there. So I'll be locked in, even if the Chiefs aren't. The top three, I guess, that if I had to root for, Jags are on my list as well. Similar reasons. One, I do think Liam Cohen's a hell of a head coach. He also gave us this gym forever.
Duval.
He gave us that. Trevor Lawrence is playing his best football, and it's Jacksonville. What am I upset about? Seattle's another one. Sam Darnold, great story. Easy to root for, that redemption arc. Mike McDonald seems like a really, really good up-and-coming head coach. Potentially a Coach of the Year candidate this year. The Seahawks are also in the NFC, so it's just easy to root for them. And then I went with Chicago as well on the other side. You know that I have been way more of a defender of Caleb Williams than others. I still, even though he has, to me, not been the reason
he's
why they're there.
He's still not taking like a huge leap forward, but he's not screwing up for
people
him.
Were hating on Caleb Williams just to hate on the kid.
Yeah, they already called the bust.
Chicago, and it's a great sports town.
Okay,
as well.
So we got two in common.
Yep.
Seahawks are kind of like, but also, you know, they've had success somewhat recently. Screw teams that have had somewhat recent success. They won a Super Bowl or went to like two Super Bowls in a row like a decade ago. I don't know. It was like right before the Chiefs got good. Didn't feel like it had been that long.
Way easier to pick the three I'm rooting against. But Drew, who are the top three that you're maybe rooting for?
I had a blend of what you guys had.
Okay.
Jags, Seahawks, and I have the Panthers as well. You know, I think it would be cool stories for all of them to find a way to get the job done. Obviously, the Sam Darnold story. I know the Seahawks have had recent history, but you know the Jags and Panthers have never won one before. I think it would be really cool for a Jacksonville. And that one team that I'm rooting hard for, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Somebody even on the text line, They said they're rooting for the Jacks, and they bought a hoodie and a hat.
Well, that's
from the 816.
I won't be doing that. I'll tell you, won't be doing
I'm
that.
I'm going to be buying a Bortles jersey sometime this weekend just to support the squad. You know?
Top three to root against. As I said, this was easy. This was very easy to compile.
Wow, you didn't even
number
think
one,
that about it.
Number one on the list.
This is not like a, this is one, two,
this
three.
This is an order. I'm giving you the order.
Okay. Mm.
If I have to pick three, I'm rooting against. Number one, the Denver Broncos. They're in your division. They're the freaking Denver Broncos. Sean Payton, Bo Nix and company. It's a division rival. Absolutely not. I do not need the Denver Broncos going from being nothing for 10 years in the division to winning the Super Bowl or something this
That's
year
your
immediately.
Nightmare, huh?
That's number one. I don't want it. Number two, and I almost put them number one. You know how I feel about the city of Philadelphia.
Oh, the Eagles.
Sorry, Ross Tucker. Sorry, Ross Tucker. The Eagles are number two. I can't stand Nick Sirianni. I'm sick of their fans already. The tush push is a joke. Can't wait for it to be banned. And yeah, selfishly, they did just beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl last year. So it's the Eagles number two. Number three. I hate to do this to our friend up in Buffalo, Mike Shope, who we might have on the show later this week, and I'll tell him I'm rooting against him. The Buffalo Bills are number three on the list for what you said, which is
the narrative.
It's the exhausting, exhausting narrative if Josh Allen actually goes there.
That's
sorry, I actually like Josh Allen. I think he's a good guy, but I'm not ready for a full summer of that,
so
selfishly.
The Bills are on my list for that reason, almost that reason alone. Because normally, as you guys know, I like rooting for loser franchises because I grew up in Kansas City. These teams spent decades not being competitive on football and in baseball. I'm used to it. I've been living this life. I am sympathetic to franchises who can't get it together and sometimes root for them to get it together. But if I have to listen to an entire offseason of the Bills winning the Super Bowl, no. Pass. Hard pass. Eagles are also on my list. Easiest one to put on the list because completely unlikable franchise, completely unlikable city, completely unlikable head coach. Just beat the Chiefs. And I don't want the Chiefs dynasty to immediately have competition with another dynasty, because if the Eagles win two in a row, then all they're short is one more Super Bowl championship in the next two or three years from getting to claim a dynasty themselves. I don't need that kind of interest. And you know what? You'd think I would put the Broncos in there. You'd think that those would be the three. Drew's answers might be different because he's a Bengals fan.
You don't have the Broncos in there?
I don't have the Broncos in there.
No division team.
I've told you this before, and this has been a well-known stated fact on the show before. My dad is a Denver Broncos fan, and so is my brother. And so they grew up that way. He grew up.
With the enemy here,
my
Gold.
Nephew. I am not a Broncos fan. I didn't grow up cheering for the Broncos. I'm fine to see them lose. I'm not rooting for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they are still family.
No, they're not.
So I have to support them in some small way. And you know who? You know who's on my list instead? The Patriots. Screw that franchise and all the success they have. They're just going to be good again? Nah, hell
if
no.
If they did win another one, that
Drake
would be tough.
May loses immediately. I hope they lose the first damn game. I'm not rooting for the Patriots. To immediately
Patriots
be good again.
Patriots were almost on the list. Yeah.
They had 20 damn years of success. I'm supposed to be rooting for them to be good. At least the Broncos were bad for a decade. No. I don't want the Patriots. They're on my list. I'm not rooting for
Drew, who are your I know who number one on your list is.
You're the ultimate
Josh Allen haters, so I know who's on number one.
A team that I despise very much so in the Pittsburgh Steelers is not even on my list, actually. The Buffalo Bills are far and away. If there could only be one team, you know what? I might put the Bills three times, actually, is who I'm rooting against.
Hate Josh Allen.
He does.
See, Josh Allen is a great dude, but he's overrated. So I think I cannot. If he wins the Super Bowl, that narrative will be just as annoying.
Well, it means your argument goes up in flames. It means it's over.
Correct. I understand that. That's part of it as well. But yes, the Bills are one. The Eagles are two. So I agree with you guys there. And then I'm going to put the Bears on there. And I think part of this is the affiliation that, you know, my grandparents lived in Wisconsin forever, big Packers fans. My brother's a Packers fan. I feel like I should hate the Bears. There's nothing for me to like about the Bears. I think Caleb Williams is a fine quarterback. Luther Burden, obviously, is good. Roma Dunze is great, but.
Rooting against the Bears?
I don't care for the Chicago Bears. That's fine.
Interesting.
And then honorable mention will be the Pittsburgh Steelers because.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe the Steelers were number one. It's the division.
This is the thing. If the Ravens were in the playoffs, the Ravens would be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, it's a respectful hate because Mike Tomlin finds a way to just improbably find a way to get that team above 500. And I hate them so much, but it's a respectful hate.
No Chargers for any of us, huh?
No
They're
Chargers.
In the division too.
I just can't believe.
No Green Bay?
I can't believe you didn't put the Broncos on there, Cody.
I'm
more surprised
you
than
that.
You defended the Denver Broncos.
I said I'm not rooting for them. I just said they're not. They, look, you want to know the list?
You didn't put either on
there. If the list went to four, there are four.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They're four if the list continues.
Hmm. But Who would your fourth be? It would be the Chargers?
I can't root for the Patriots. The franchise had 20 years of shoving in Kansas City. The Chiefs went 30 years without a playoff win, and the Patriots are good the entire time.
It sounds like you would rather deal with the relentless energy from Broncos fans than Patriots fans if they were to win, then, it sounds like. Because Patriots fans could obviously come back and say, hey, we're back, baby. We're right back here.
Both would be exhausting.
I just, like, Cody's be wearing blue and orange shoes here pretty soon.
Relax.
This playoff run. I was at Shawnee Mission Ford yesterday, and I might be swapping out the F-150 for another vehicle soon because we rotate through, and I said, no Bronco till the Broncos are eliminated from the playoffs. I'm not driving the Ford Bronco until after the Broncos are out of the playoffs. You think I'm driving a Ford Bronco the week of the Super Bowl? If the Broncos are in it, I'll have to tell them pause. So we got to wait another week.
You're going pretty far. Can I make you feel a little bit better that I started at least the Raiders hate for my son?
Good.
We were watching the week.
Did you start telling him that the Raiders are just trash? Their fan base and everything are all trash.
It wasn't quite that strong. He said, who are the Chiefs playing? Because we were watching the game on Sunday. I said, oh, they're playing the Raiders. He's like, do people cheer for the Raiders? I said, no, nobody likes the Raiders. And he said, well, why are they a team? I said, does anybody in Kansas City? I said, maybe one or two people. And he's like, boy, I don't even know why anyone likes them. He said, I don't even like their colors. That's what he said. Unprompted. Yeah. So
They're the worst.
You know, my nephews, because my brother, I told you, grew up a Broncos. my dad grew up a Broncos fan. And so he got, of the seven kids, he got one to root for the Broncos, my brother Stefan.
Yeah.
So he has two sons who are only a couple years apart in age. He's gotten one to be a Broncos fan, but the other one's a Chiefs fan. He's a Patrick Mahomes fan.
Someone says, how come you didn't mention the Chargers? The reason why the Chargers aren't the same level of hate, the Broncos have been way more of a pain in the, you know what, than the Chargers have.
Chargers have no Super Bowls.
Yeah, and the Chargers
feels so like
the less, Chargers are also what, the seven seed in the postseason. So
are they the seven or the six? No, either.
Seven playing the Patriots, right? 7-2,
right.
Is that right?
Yep,
so
you're right,
the seven. The Chargers to me are just not also going to factor into the Super Bowl type of conversation this year, personally.
Cody, I'm really.
You let a Raiders fan. This is all making sense. Cody just basically told us because of family allegiance, he doesn't hate the Broncos, and he has let a Raiders fan sleep in his bed. And it's not his wife.
Honestly, that is, golly, that is crazy.
Right? It's not that crazy.
There's no way. There's no way.
We can all relax a little. You can still associate with people who have different fandom.
Associate, but you're letting them sleep in your bed, shower in your shower.
The only thing I'm disappointed at is when you said family, you didn't say it like Brian Kelly did.
Family.
You should have said it that way.
In fairness, that was it.
Family, like, affiliations.
There's not a single other family member who adopted a different team. It was just,
man.
By the way, do you want to know why my dad chose the Broncos? He was a little kid, and they used to spend like half their time in Colorado and half their time in Kansas City. So, like, it makes sense that he had fan. And he said, growing up, he would kind of root for both, but he was like more of a Chiefs fan. And then they missed that kick on Christmas Day, and it ruined his Christmas when he was like six, and he was like, screw this team.
Someone said,
and he switched. And you're like, God, that's ice cold. Didn't have the loyalty that some other people
from had. From the 785, I'm burning my Cody Tapp jersey.
I don't have a jersey. I did not say I'm rooting for them either. I want to make that clear. I just said they're number four on my rooting against.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in 7 minutes, we'll get to the trash of the day. All right, we didn't get to this because we were talking with Ross Tucker for a bit, but last night we were all in our group chat texting a little bit. Didn't think we would be because the way it was trending, thought I was going to be going to bed pretty early last night. KU was getting embarrassed at home by TCU. The defense was just completely abysmal. At one point, I think with 8.5 minutes to go, TCU had already scored 40 points in the second half. KU at that point was getting out rebounded, like offensive boards, I should say, 13-5. At one point, Kansas was down, 15 or 16 with less than 5 minutes to play. They come all the way back. A little Allen Fieldhouse magic and a complete choke job by TCU and poor coaching, I think, by Jamie Dixon down the stretch. And Kansas ends up winning in overtime. It was one of the more crazier comeback wins that we've seen in a bit.
Kansas has had a number of crazy comebacks.
But this one,
if
you just look at like some of the betting markets and where it was at, KU was 25-1 to win with 3 minutes to go, and they came all the way back to win. It was just a crazy thriller of a game for the Jayhawks. And then we talked yesterday about Darren Peterson. And how many minutes would he play? He ends up playing 32 minutes. If I would have told you that before the game, you'd be like, oh,
they
great.
Win by 15.
32 points in 32 minutes. Yeah, but it still gets weirder. And we can laugh about it a bit more because they won, if you're a KU fan. But
because he didn't play in the entire 5 minute overtime.
Yet again, something bizarre around it happened. So yeah. He plays 32 minutes, but late in the game, mid possession, I should say, he looks to the bench to pull himself out of the game while a teammate is passing him the ball. So the ball goes out of bounds. They lose the ball. At that point, you think the game's over. So he then sits for what, the final two minutes and 45 seconds, basically, 50 seconds. And then he comes back in and he gets fouled.
Immediately gets the foul. And he was fouled. It wasn't like a ticky tack.
Gets fouled and just cold-blooded knocks down three free throws.
Bottom of the net.
And then he doesn't play a single minute in overtime.
Did you see what Bill Self said after the game?
Yes. Go ahead.
For those who didn't, he said he started cramping again. For 5 seconds, he could suck it up. But after he made the free throws, he said, quote, okay, get me out.
And so, look, I don't know if he's going to play this weekend. That will be a huge question. There is no doubt. Like, this Kansas team is very weird. Because if they had lost that game to TCU, it felt like it was barreling right towards the exact same as last season. They'd win just enough games, and with the branding and the conference that they play in, they don't end up as a 7 or 8 seed gold with no real title contention and just kind of flame out for the second straight year. And we'd have to be talking about if they were in the middle of there when Kentucky had a couple-year run, when North Carolina had a couple-year run, where they just weren't the same blue blood program that we'd all gotten used to. And it seemed like for a while there, Kansas was immune to it until last season. And it's got to be more than 1 year for me to say that you're in that kind of cycle. Darren Peterson, without question, is awesome.
When he's on the, when he's playing, you can see why he's the number one overall pick potentially.
And that was an incredible comeback. They should still be very scared that in their first two conference games in the Big 12, which is, by the way, the conference gets a whole hell of a lot harder than the first two games they just played here. They got three other top 10 teams in their conference. These are supposed to be the winnable ones. At home against TCU is supposed to be an auto dub, and they had to fight like
they shouldn't have won. Yeah, they shouldn't have won the game.
I mean, but they did, and I'll give them credit for winning. But
absolutely, and it's just the 13th team in D1 basketball history to trail by 15 or more with 5 minutes to go and find a way to win. But their defense has disappeared over the Christmas break. And then Melvin Council Jr. is incredible when Darren Peterson's not on the floor. When Darren Peterson's on the floor with them, he turns so passive. And they've got to find a way to get that group to play at a high level together. If they do, then they're a team that has a chance to do some really special things. If not, there's going to be a lot of games like this where no matter who they're playing, it's going to be a really close game, or they're going to be down and having to be saved at the end by a miracle.
The biggest issue I think they have right now as a team is Darren Peterson is great. Melvin Council Jr. is also great. He looks to be a very, very good college basketball player. Does anybody think that they have any idea how to play those two guys on the court at the same time?
That's what I'm saying. He turns passive.
I just like, they got to figure out a way for Darren Peterson to become at times, not always, but at times, a mutual facilitator with Melvin Council and just take turns being the aggressor. And what I'd say is the last time I feel like Kansas did that well, Gold, like where they had two guys who I thought could both be the aggressor and both score will, was Devontae Graham and Frank Mason. That was the last time I remember them having two guys who both could take over a game and they would like take turns doing it. How do you get to that?
Those were three, 4 year players too, though.
Sure.
You know, that's just the nature of college basketball has changed. You know, that's, you don't have 3 or 4 years to have these guys run through your program.
You're probably
anymore,
right. Like freshman year, they probably didn't do that because
I mean, Devontae Graham, freshman year, or, you know, wasn't he at Towson? I believe that's where he started or whatever. Right. And then he transferred, or he was committed. Maybe I don't know if he transferred, but he was committed or whatever. And then he was a late recruit. And so then he developed into obviously a hell of a college basketball player, but that was just a crazy game. One of the crazier games. And then I was telling Drew, like, basically Darren Peterson was a pinch hitter late in the game.
It was
like,
that's what he was.
All right, we need you for 5 seconds. Come on in, save us.
He came in, got fouled immediately.
And he did.
Swished three free throws and then just was gone. Just never played again. And like, certainly when they got like a 5-point lead or a 6-point lead in the overtime, it didn't feel like they were going to steer it. Although TCU,
yeah, they played great.
They played great until the final three minutes.
They were amazing until the final 3 minutes, and then they freaked out.
It feels like, too, like, and this is something maybe that even come tournament time, like, obviously, their starting five is great, but they don't have, in their last three meaningful games, NC State, you look at this one, then you look at the UCF game, like, the bench hasn't contributed anything, almost, from an offensive perspective, which I think would concern me a little bit when you're getting into March and you're playing those better teams that are maybe a little bit deeper.
To, um, Tonight, Missouri, by the way, SEC play at Kentucky. Kentucky, they're in Lexington tonight. 9-5 Kentucky Wildcats. They've been disappointing so far this season. The Tigers are 11-3, and then Kansas State is also in action tonight. Late one, 8 o'clock out west. They're taking on number one Arizona, undefeated Arizona Wildcats.
How big of a dog are they?
17.5 point underdogs tonight. They were 21, 22 point dogs, so the line's actually come down.
Some big money, some sharp money, maybe came in.
Big spread tonight.
Or a lot of public money. I don't know.
Yeah.
Trash of the day.
All right, this one has to do with a fortune teller. Have you guys gone to a fortune teller ever? We've had I don't know if a fortune teller is the right. We had someone that came on the show and kind of.
I've had a tarot card reading.
You have? Okay.
Not a fortune teller, but I would say close.
Cody, when he was like 13, was calling Miss Cleo up on the 800 number or whatever. Yeah.
Miss Cleo. She went to jail, man, for fraud.
RIP now, but yeah, she did go to jail for fraud. Anyway, a fortune teller in Thailand predicted something to happen, and he ensured it would happen to prove himself right. Guaranteed that he was correct. So police arrested this gentleman. I cannot pronounce this name. I'm not going to even try. 38-year-old. After okay. he stole... Yeah, like you've seen the name. There's just no way. There's no way. Swiped a 19-year-old woman's iPhone while she was praying at a temple. Earlier that day, the woman stopped in to get her fortune read by this guy outside the temple. He warned her she would face bad luck and lose a valuable item soon.
So he's trying to make the fortune come true?
Then offer to prevent it for a fee. So she paid to prevent this from happening. Or
maybe she didn't pay.
She declined. She said, I'm not going to pay. When her phone vanished during prayer, she remembered his prediction, confronted him. He denied it. And it turns out
this is not the first time this man's pulled this ass.
Yeah, he's like, you better pay me because you might lose something valuable. She doesn't pay. And then he just steals her phone hours later.
It's very important to get repeat customers in any line of business.
Yeah.
And this man was trying to drum up a little bit of a repeat business in the worst conceivable way. Would your initial instinct, let's say you and I just like for fun on a show, went to go to a tarot card reading. And the person said, hey, you're going to lose a valuable item soon. And then later, Alex, you don't know where your Apple Watch went. Would your initial instinct be, before this story, I guess, would your initial instinct been that that person stole it? Or
no,
just that
I
that was
said,
random luck?
I would have said, you got to be freaking kidding me. I just would have been like this. But in this case, yeah.
I still wouldn't believe that it was because they said the fortune. I would just think it was like random.
But this guy was, in this case, this guy was right outside the temple, I guess, that she was at all day. So it was very obvious.
What's your sign? Let's look up your fortune for today.
So, Capricorn.
I don't know. I barely
Capricorn,
know.
My birthday's next week, man. We're right on it.
My wife's birthday is today.
Hey, there you go. Happy birthday.
So I should probably know the horoscope.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Emma. What's it say? I don't know if I want to know. I usually don't check this kind of stuff.
I can't tell you the last time I checked it. I just wanted to look up. Let's see.
What's today for Capricorn?
Horoscope. There we go. Sorry, I had to look it up for today.
What do we got?
How annoying when work gets in the way of pleasure. But there are times when professional opportunities are simply too good to pass up. That beguiling creature that you've kept your eye on or just wait for another day. For now, Capricorn, focus on the business at hand. With the current aspect at play, the payoff could be tremendous.
We're locked in, baby. We're locked in to work.
Anytime I hear the word pleasure,
don't let that love life get in your way.
We are locked
these other
in.
Hey, anytime I hear the word focus. Pleasure, I just can't help but think of the, the drop. It's just
I also just said it weird, so like that didn't help probably. But yes, happy birthday to my wife.
Yeah. Wish her a happy There's birthday, a greater you know. Chance that it does result in some pleasure.
Not today.
Not this time.
Not today.
We are locked in.
Not for you.
Here on January 7th, we are locked in to business at hand. All the business.
Drew, what's your sign?
Libra.
Pay for that pleasure?
No, definitely not. Definitely not that.
My horoscope for today is it isn't nearly as bad as you think.
Oh.
Virgo, in fact, things are definitely looking up.
All right.
Of course, you'll never know that if you refuse to drag yourself out of bed to see for yourself. Wow, they're just crushing me in this thing? They're saying you drag yourself out if you'd actually see things are getting better. Your hard work over the last few months have left you, should leave you energized.
Wait, this is for you or for Drew,
drained.
Sorry.
Me.
Okay.
But today you begin to see the payoff. It is time to get up, get dressed, and dazzle the world with your brilliance.
Do you feel like you're not?
You can do it. They're essentially saying you've been a sad sack,
bump on a log,
loser idiot for the last couple of months. Things are getting better and you should see it. Get your ass off the couch.
Wow.
wow. was essentially my horoscope, way harsher than yours.
Damn.
My gosh, way harsher than
yours. It's like a wake-up call.
We come back from break.
That's
I'll
the trash
Drew's.
Of the day.
I'll have Drew's.
That is the trash of the day. Up next, we'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll find out about Drew's horoscope, I guess, of the day, and whether or not Brett Veach's future looks bright.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Reminder, coming up at 1 o'clock today, our guy Jay Binkley going to join us in studio. It's been a bit since we checked in with him. Want to get his thoughts on how he sees the path forward for the Chiefs as an organization. And also, we're going to talk a little draft, right? I know we got 100-plus days. Doesn't mean we can't talk in a little bit. Doesn't mean we're going to commit to picks
or anything. I feel like we have to.
But Bink's our draft guy. Him and Chris Unocero do a great job with the Character Concerns podcast. Those podcasts have been going on even during the NFL season, and it's about ready for them to start locking in. Combine is right around the corner. So we'll talk a little draft with Bink as well coming up at 1 o'clock today, and a little CFP, college football playoff semis, coming up tomorrow night.
Lot to talk about with Bink. First, though, we got to get Drew his horoscope before we get into the Chiefs
stuff. And you are what now? What are you again?
Libra.
Libra. Libra. Right on the button. The
and
part.
We're doing this again because our trash of the day had to do with a fortune teller ripping somebody off.
Yeah, if for some reason you're just now tuning in. Drew, think of yourself as a marathon runner.
Oh, great of start. Course.
Great
of course.
Start.
I mean,
I am not making this
I
up.
I mean,
this is for real, the horoscope. You have a very long distance to travel, but the sweetness is not just to be found in crossing the finish line, but rather in relishing all the sights along the way. Hmm. While your head today is overflowing with plans and ideas, you begin to feel deflated when you begin to consider all the logistics and realizing these dreams. Fret not, Libra. The planets have blessed you with an energy level that is equal to the task, so go ahead and get started.
Instagram post coming a little bit later.
How about that, Drew? What do you make of that?
It is, you know, the running aspect is fitting, I would say.
Mine was by far the most bleak.
Well, no, it was saying things have been bleak. It's saying better days are ahead for you.
So wake up and smell the coffee is what it's saying.
Yeah. Just had a different energy.
Someone says
it,
Drew's now going to take 50 more shirtless selfies this year because of that. Let's hope not. All right, let's talk a little Chiefs.
If I get the six-pack, it might happen. I don't know.
We'll talk some Chiefs football. So thinking of looking ahead to the future and everything like that, it is very clear with the draft and this entire offseason, whether or not we're talking about Brett Veach and this front office being the same 3 or 4 years from now is absolutely dependent on what happens over the next 6 months via free agency and draft. And that is just, I think, a foregone conclusion. You can say, well, no kidding. Every GM, if they have, you know, 3 or 4 years of bad years. But this offseason is setting up the next 3+ years. At least it should, if all goes well. Or we're going to be sitting here in 2 or 3 years and saying, wow, it's time to blow the whole thing up.
And Patrick Mahomes will be 3 or 4 years older. If their dynasty is going to continue, or Dynasty 2 is going to start up, let's say, because you and I thought the initial dynasty ended... certainly, if we didn't think after the Super Bowl, the way this season's gone, it feels like I got to at least take a stop set. Now, if they went back and won the Super Bowl next year, we'd have a different conversation, I understand. As safe as Brett Veach's job appears, this draft can get him fired. Because if you start going through right now and you really evaluate where he's made the most hay as a GM, it is not the first or the second round. He has good first and second round players. Willie Gay Jr. was a good second-round player. Creed Humphrey is a good second-round player. Nick Bolton is a good second-round player. He has good first-round players, McDuffie and Karlaftis. But more misses than hits in those rounds. I'm not saying he's a bad GM. I think he's done a good job with contracts, and he finds more talent rounds 4 through 7 than every GM in the league, maybe combined. I don't know. He's just good at it. And so for all the guys he's found that have worked in those rounds, and Brian Cook, right, another good second-round pick in the same year he screwed up in taking Sky Moore. But the last couple of years, Felix, bust, Rice, not a bust, certainly a good second-round pick. Worthy has 1,000 total yards in 2 seasons. That's not going great. Kingsley, at least a viable guard, but not what you were trying to do. We don't know about Simmons and Omar Norman Lott yet, although Simmons looks to be a good hit. When you're picking 9 and it's been going wishy-washy, because that's what I would call it, Veach has not been missing all the time. But he's not been hitting all the time either, and we don't have to pretend that that's the case. You're picking 9 overall and then 40th, and you have these kind of picks at your disposal, it could get you fired if you screw it up pretty bad. I think if it's a total miss, it could get you fired.
Yeah, it's the most important draft that he's had. And before that, it was post-Tampa. We all know that, the post-Tampa Super Bowl. Now this is the most important draft of his career. But I will also say, and I think you know this, you mentened the hits and the misses, and he certainly has misses. And he certainly has some hits.
I thought 4-7, you're going to be really impressed.
He certainly has hits. I would just say we can do that exercise with just about every GM in football. Yes, even the great Howie Roseman in Philadelphia, believe it or not.
He took Jalen Reagor a pick before he took Justin Jefferson one year.
So part of the nature of just how this game is played from a front office with the draft, yes, you were paid to get it right. But you're not batting 90%. You're not batting even 85% most GMs. No,
50-50. A good GM hits it 50-60%.
And the exciting part, I will say, and I'm with you that the consequence is real. Yes, if they whiff, there will be serious consequences for him and for this organization in 2+ years. But I will say he has never had an opportunity to draft at this level.
Yep.
Whenever they've traded up and drafted higher, like his highest pick prior to this was what? Trent McDuffie. And that one was
22.
And that one worked out pretty darn well. Other than that, he's been mainly drafting 28 to 32.
Yes.
And I still think that has to be part of the story we tell when we're evaluating his draft success or failure. So this year, when you're not having that as a reasoning anymore, when you're picking ninth, maybe they trade back. I don't know. But right now they're picking ninth and 40. You got to hit. And it's not even just a hit. One of those guys, and we're talking pick nine, not 40 necessarily, but I guess either one if it worked out. But
don't care which.
Got to find a franchise pillar. Has to. I'm not expecting him to go find three franchise. I would love for that to happen. I don't think it's realistic to think he's going to go find three guys that are getting automatically second contracts that are going to end up being star all pros. Like I would love that. That's a bit much. But at minimum, pick 9 and 40, it doesn't matter which pick it is. We all assume it would be 9. One of those guys has to be a guy we're talking about 7 years from now still being one of the mainstays of the franchise.
That's what's important, is that I'm not here to try to claim that, because like look at even like Noel Williams this year in the third round. That looks like probably going to be a pretty good pick, right? Yeah. And all the guys who have, like whether you liked what Pacheco did this year or not, or the other guys, he has found, and you know, how much money Jalen Watson's going to make in the seventh. I can go through his success stories.
Yeah.
At pick 9 or pick 40, just in this draft, my biggest complaint about Brett Veach is his inability to find star-level talent. It was actually, weirdly enough, the thing his predecessor was best at. He is better at every part of being a GM than John Dorsey, except finding star talent, and which was John Dorsey's absolute best quality.
I don't disagree, but also, again, that goes back, we have to tell the full story. John Dorsey wasn't picking 28 to 32 every single year.
But he took Tyreek Hill in the fourth round, he took Chris Jones in the third, he took Travis Kelce in the third. He picked 10th, and he took Patrick Mahomes, and he found the star. And I understand Brett Veach's involvement in that, so I'm not going to dismiss that. But what I'm saying is the thing that Brett Veach has struggled at is finding elite talent at an elite position. Because I could argue that Creed Humphrey, by all NFL metric standards,
is
an elite talent.
Top-tier position.
It's not Trent McDuffie?
Yeah. Corner is like, it's almost an elite position.
It's number 3 or 4 on my list of positional value easily.
Quarterback, defensive end.
Tackles, and then
tackle,
corner.
Wide receiver. And look, maybe he found it with Simmons. I'd say wide receiver before, but that's fine.
Yeah.
It's corner is probably 4 from my list. So it's not important, but like.
Simmons for sure. Yeah.
He might have done it with Simmons. Like. He might have done it with Simmons. Tackle is one of those positions, to Gold's point. It's one of the top 3. No matter who's making this list, me or him. But we don't know that yet. And so maybe that story is softening. But specific, you know what positions we're talking about here? Wide receiver and defensive end. The two positions he's had the hardest time.
No question.
Drafting, and are two of the, even if you're ranking it out, 4 most important positions on an NFL field, and one of the 3 most important apps in quarterback, which is already on this team. Right? So of the 3 positions he has to draft every year that are of importance, 2 of them he has not found talent at consistently. He's found a slightly better than league average player in George Karlaftis, who's a perfectly fine player to draft, but not a star. And he's found a corner who is a star, but in the other 2 positions, they've struggled. At corner, they found talent.
Yeah, and that's why this is such a big draft, because they're in a position where they are going to have to draft premium positions, whether we think pick 9 is going to be wide receiver, defensive end, defensive tackle. I hope it's not running back.
But I hope so too. They
need to address running back. I don't think they need to do it at 9th overall. But they're going to have an opportunity to draft a premium position, and he's going to have to hit on it. Yeah, and there's no denying that. There's a chance, though, also a year from now, we're looking at this past year's draft a hell of a lot differently than the way people are judging it as at present day. As in, you could have a full season of Josh Simmons and we're saying, oh, as a slam dunk pick, and the whole vibes are different about how we feel about his first round draft history as well. Someone on the text line saying McDuffie's not an elite talent. I just fundamentally disagree.
He's
an elite talent. Are you, like, we can argue about where he ranks as corner. To say he's not an elite talent is just, I'm sorry.
Crazy.
Like, that's just wrong. Like, he's an elite talent.
You know how many
talent?
Teams would take Trent McDuffie in a heartbeat to over their DBs? Like,
every team.
To say elite. The text says he's not an elite talent doesn't make a difference.
If
he's
you
just a solid player. Come on now.
If you did a 32-team draft and redrafted every corner available in the entire league, he'd go like fifth. Someone to take Patrick Sertan or a couple of other guys, he would go no lower than fifth. How about that?
Yeah, no, yeah, he might even go third.
He'd go no lower than fifth if there was a league. If every team had to put every corner they had on their entire roster into a draft,
I just think
so. Like, I'm not trying to take away actual hits here for Brett.
Yeah,
receiver and defensive end has been a problem
for sure. I just think if we played this game with we don't have time to do it if you want, but like, if we were to go through pick five random GMs, certainly of contenders. Or if we were doing this radio show in Baltimore, or we were doing this radio show in Buffalo, I bet you people think their GM sucks and misses all the time as well. Yeah. Like, you just don't hit at the rate that people are expecting you to hit. I'm in agreement that this year he has to hit at 9 and or 40, but this idea that like he's a poor drafter, I adamantly think is incorrect.
It's just not true. The thing is, and I will give him credit for this, Howie Roseman, who is considered to be, by most accounts, people's best GM in the league, he misses way less in round one and two, and misses way more rounds 3 through 7. So, like, and then the truth is, if I could reverse that for Brett Veach, and you just told me he almost hit every time rounds one and two, and instead of finding these guys in 4, 5, 6, and 7, I'd switch, because that's why guys like Devonta Smith and Landon Dickerson and Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith and Quinyon Mitchell and these guys he takes in the first and the second round who work.
Yeah, no, I hear. I'm just saying, like,
out.
They like,
but
just
they
how
have
we
plenty
have,
of misses too. Jalen Rager was the one I mentioned, and there's others. Who
just like
good.
People will bring up Breland Speaks, who was a second rounder. I mean, in Philadelphia, do you remember the name Danny Watkins? Probably not. He was a first round pick and he was a bust. Right? They drafted him 23rd overall. I mean, there's just a lot. Jalen, you already brought up Rieger. Jalen Rieger.
It was a terrible pick.
My point is just that we can do this. Like,
I'm saying he has less misses in the
first and second. We can do this with every GM is all I'm saying. Like, this idea, like, yeah, Felix was a complete whiff. That goes on his record. I can find picks like that for a lot of GMs is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Especially if you're picking 28 to 32
and
every year.
Way more whiffs for most of the GMs. The truth is, if you rank them up against the top five GMs in the league, everybody's universal consensus, we NFL 100 people of NFL ilk, and they gave us the top five GMs. If you rank them against the other four guys, he is probably third or fourth in drafting first and second round guys, or fourth or fifth. But I guarantee he's first or second in drafting third and after. So it's a balance. But he's picking 9.
Yeah.
So, like, of all the times I need you not to screw up the first or second round pick, I'm sorry, it's this one. You're picking 9 and 40. So, like, for all the times you might have missed on those other ones, no whiff in here. Like, you got to be on it. This is way too important a pick for the rebalance of what the Chiefs have been roster-wise over the last couple of years. And we know it's really important. Like, he knows it's really important. It's not like a mystery. It's just especially important because of his history. My biggest fear, truthfully, is the only two positions I really want in the first round are either defensive line, interior, or edge, or wide receiver with pick number 9. Those have been categorically his worst positions to draft. Because right now he's taken one in the first and the second round in each of the last two drafts, and neither of those guys has emerged as a star yet either, or two of the last three drafts. Because Worthy, and I can explain away and excuse away part of Worthy's problems, no doubt. But the numbers are the numbers. He has spent 2 years as a wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs. His numbers are that equal to Mecole Hardman's. And Mecole Hardman just stabilized into being a 500 or 600 yard wide receiver, who certainly is not an NFL bust, and gets to stay on a roster, but is not worthy of a first-round pick. And so, like, and I'm not saying Worthy is yet. I don't think we know that story yet. I think year 3 is going to determine
we'll
that for him.
I want to see a fully healthy season again for him.
But he's taking a lot of cracks at wide receiver, and he's taking a lot of cracks at defensive line. And that's what he's probably going to pick at 9, and I'm just like, please don't screw it up. And you're right. He's going to get a pick 20 spots higher than he has been, so there should be a stronger likelihood he doesn't, I think. Now, they might have to find a new tight end.
Travis Kelce.
Oh God, I hope not.
We all know there's a chance he's not back. Some people think it's more likely that he's not back than others. And then you hear what Travis Kelce had to say on New Heights today, and I know it changed your opinion maybe a little bit.
Now that the season is over, what is next for the Big Yeti?
Man.
Trab, you want to tell us all of your personal endeavors?
Yeah, every season ends for me. I put my feet up and I just be a human.
Yeah.
Just being a regular human for a couple weeks, maybe a month or so, and trying to figure out what I'm going to do next in terms of my future in football. You know, I've talked to a few people in the facility already, you know, having the exit meetings and everything, and they know where I stand, at least right now. And there's a lot of love for the game that's still there. And I don't think I'll ever lose that. It's a tough thing to navigate. But at the same time, if my body can heal up and rest up and I can feel confident that I can go out there and give it another 18, 20, 21 week run, I think I would do it in a heartbeat. So I think right now it's just finding that answer and seeing how the body feels after this game and kind of when it all settles down.
I'm confused. So you're not already coming back? Chris Jones has said that you're coming back. I thought this was already...
Nice. That's why we love Chris. He's very optimistic.
So that was Travis and his brother Jason, obviously, on New Heights. It's clear that he wants to play football still based off of that. That's
and
not
he's
even
trying to make a lifetime decision of health. And so I don't know, man, did everyone see the way he played this year? Ross Tucker, when he was on with us at 10:30, he pointed out something that I hadn't even thought about, which was Travis Kelce's stats as it relates to the yards per target in an offense, by the way, that did struggle at times this year. Now didn't struggle at other times. I want to point out the Chiefs for a stretch, maybe half or a little bit better than half of the season, were a top 5 or 6 points per game offense in the NFL. I know it didn't feel that way, but definitely were. He went from 8.5 yards per catch last year, really bad, to 11.2. That's better than it's been since 2022. Now, he was 12 or 13 yards a catch instead of 11 yards per catch. He finished the season with 851 yards, was on pace to be a 1,000-yard wide receiver before Patrick Mahomes got hurt. So had his numbers continued instead of the 9 yards a game, he got the final bit. When it really didn't matter, he probably would have finished. Let's be honest. I don't think he would have finished with 1,000 yards Mahomes. He'd probably finish at like 9, 10, or 15. What part of the way he played last year and the health he had makes you think he can't play again? Unless he was suffering from some bodily injury or health concern that I don't know about. And he's going to get to heal an extra month this year. 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think the only pushback at all you would say, because the numbers show that he was very, very productive, would just be the drops. And like, just that, is that something that is going to happen more in the final year or years, depending on how many plays more of his career, right? Whether it's focus, whether it's just, frankly, hand-eye coordination as you get older, slowing down, whatever it may be, what led to those drops this year? I don't have the answer to that, but like, what led to that? Was that just, hey, one of those random years? Or was there something actually physically that is making it more challenging for him in certain spots?
I'm sure
I don't know,
hard.
Right? Like, yeah.
But I do think he had a different workout regimen and effort.
And that's the thing.
This previous postseason, or than he's ever had.
And I think he did, but does he want to, you know, he wants to play football. Does he said his body will tell him basically, can I still do this? And in order to still do it, does the offseason he just have to happen again? And is he willing to do that aspect of it? But in terms of love of the game and wanting to play, I mean, he basically just told you the answer to that. Like, that's not even the debate. It's more about the health side of it. The good news, if you are looking at it from just that perspective and how is he feeling? Well, he gets a whole month of January this year. Last year, he had to make a decision.
2 weeks. 3 weeks.
Very quick. Huh? He gets all of January. A month from now, I'm sure his body's going to feel a heck of a lot better. I think it's more just like the workout regimen that's required again. Does he want to go through that again? And then you and I have already talked about this. There is still the reality of the business side of the game, which is, what is he willing to come back for financially? And what are the Chiefs willing to pay him financially? There has to be a little bit of give and take on both sides.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think, just knowing Travis and how long he's been on this team, he could have demanded a higher salary at any point in Kansas City and tried to jump the tight end number significantly. He didn't. He just kept the tight end number slightly above where it was. Was he one of the highest paid tight ends in the league the entire time? Sure. Did he ever try to like hold them hostage and make it, hey, I should be paid like a wide receiver. Look at my numbers, you jerks. No, he never made it about that. So I assume that they will just pay him like all the other tight ends in the NFL who get 800 to 1,000 yards, which is $12 million a year. That's what I assume the number will come in around. Now, that might be 10 base up to 14, and 2 million of those are easily attainable incentives, and You know, it's $16 million if you win the Super Bowl and we go to the AFC title game or whatever other stuff you got to stack up that you can spread out over a two-year time period. It might look like that, but I don't think the number is the biggest part of the issue. I think the biggest part of the issue is convincing him to come back. And the part that I still think is very true, as much as I see someone on the text line saying, Kansas City's getting tired of Travis, and I've seen people, like there are people who
there's
are
a decent amount of convinced people who have texted
and are
just in
that, ready to move on from Travis and are ready to start young and start fresh at the position and do all those other things. I caution this because Kansas City, there is no place on the planet who is more blind to the difficulty of getting good tight end play than this city. I'm sorry. They got 12 years or whatever it was of Tony Gonzalez. They had to watch Brad Cotton play for a season or whatever the hell it was. And then after that, they got the next best tight end.
Yeah, I think there's like history. What it was like a 4 or 5 year gap
you,
or something.
And I'm not saying this to be rude. You all forgot what it was like to have a 450-yard tight end. And I'm not even kidding. That's what 50% of the league has to operate. You guys hate Noah Gray. Hate him. I can't. You guys send negative text every week about how much Noah Gray stinks. Noah Gray is a league average NFL tight end. He is what most teams have. So, like, before you're ready to run Travis out of town when he's still got 850 yards left in the tank for one more season for what is a pittance compared to what you would have to pay for a free agent wide receiver or anything else in the free agent market other than running back, where you could certainly improve and get that for cheap and pair with Travis Kelce. I would caution against running Travis out of town is all I'm
saying. Yeah, I am not anti-Travis Kelce coming back. I've just told you that it cannot be 1 year for $16 million. That's all. And you're like, well, it's not my money. Yeah, you're right. It's not my money, but there's still a thing. It's salary cap.
It's different than baseball.
It's not the same thing. If it was baseball, I don't care. They could pay him $30 million next year. I don't give a damn. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. There is still building out the best roster and positioning yourself the best for not just 2026, but moving beyond 2026. And is Travis Kelce on the team and the financials that come with that, is that the best path? And that's what they have to decide. Based on what he just said there, you would have to think that there is a better chance than whatever you thought before. Like whatever percentage you were at, if you thought it was a 70% chance he was coming back or a 70% chance he wasn't, the number had to have moved based on what you just heard Travis say, which is, it is simply like, how is my body feeling? And can I my body get through 18 games next year? And that answer, not whether or not he thinks he's going to be too busy doing all this other stuff that he can do if he chooses, or not because he's getting married in the offseason, but is his body going to let him play? He was healthy all year. Like, in terms of, I'm not saying he wasn't feeling miserable at times, but
in terms of actual
reported injuries, he didn't have those this year, which was great. Does he think he can get through another season doing that? If he can, I told you, like, the dream contract scenario where I think it's best for everybody, it's a base salary of like $10 million and incentives can bump it up as high as you want to bump it up. That would be awesome.
I think we're talking similar contract numbers. Yeah. I don't think Travis Kelce is going to come in here in a wolf mask and say, I want $18 million a year. Take it or leave it.
Well, I don't think it'd be more.
The
question would be whether it was 16. I don't think there's any world where he's asking or getting more than $16 million a year.
Yeah. Kittle's making?
Well, wasn't he 16 this past year?
He was in the final year of the deal. So, the average per year was nowhere near that, which is the other part, you have to consider. Right now, the highest paid tight end in the league, I don't even think he makes that. George Kittle makes $19 million per year gold. Trey McBride makes $19 million a year on average. Travis Kelce in this previous deal made $16 million per year.
I just don't want the offense to still be it's great to have a reliable tight end. I'm with you. Like you need it. Look at any of the quarterbacks that are having great years. Like Drake May, he's got Hunter Henry may not be the big, big name, but Hunter Henry's having a hell of a year. Drake May, it's a big part of success for a lot of these quarterbacks. Look at what the Rams are doing with multiple tight ends. A big part of the reason why Matthew Stafford, in addition to having Puka, is having the year he's having. Tight end is a very important position. I don't discount that. I think you're spot on. My only thing is I don't want the 2026 offense to be like, Travis has to bail us out. Travis has to bail us out. It's all about whether or not he's having a good year or not. That, to me, is a disaster for 2026 if that's how they approach it.
The last thing I'll say, and then we can move on, but I like, at least for now, although there's something else, a rumor, Travis, we could talk about too, which is fun. But when we talk about him, the one thing I'll say is, Gold, your team, take a defensive lineman no matter what, essentially a pick number 9.
I'll
just tell you right now, Travis Kelce not coming back, the Chiefs are going to be tempted to take a wide receiver. They're going to be very tempted to go get
Well, I can be talked into Carnell Tate
for the next 10 years.
I can be talked into Carnell Tate at 9, Cody.
So I'm just
I don't want Sadiq at 9.
The thing though too about that is are they willing to transition from make a change from the type of wide receiver they get? Because Jordan Tyson sounds nice. Carnell Tate sounds nice, but
Tyson's another
that's not the guys that they've drafted before. So can they change from that?
But it's also like a guy that they have had at some point. Not common. But it is a wide receiver they've had at some point.
All right, up next, guys, we'll get to what's trending. We'll also get back into the big news out of Baltimore. Of course, John Harbaugh, no longer the head coach after 18 years. Massive trickle-down effect. What does it do for the AFC, and what's the latest on the coaching front?